Hello and welcome to another episode of Fool's Daily. I'm Conrad, and with me today I have a fellow Tainlorn club member in the shape, the sprightly shape, of one Des Brennan.
Oh, thank you very much.
Hello, Des.
Hello.
So, Des, as you're a new voice on the podcast, why don't you give us a 30-second potted history of your gaming background?
Sure, I'll try and go as fast as I can. Here we go. So I started, like, you know, a lot of people started back in the probably early 90s with HeroQuest and Space Crusader. Really enjoyed those. Got bought some GW models and I kind of invented my own games with them. Eventually I managed to convince some of my friends to play Second Ed 40K with me, and we used to play that on our living room floor, you know, millions of models. Didn't really know what the rules were properly, but, you know, we enjoyed it nevertheless.
Fluff for two, right?
Yeah, exactly. Moved into 4th Ed Fantasy as well, mainly stabbing myself on those awful goblin spearmen you might be able to remember.
Yes.
Then I moved in, you know, started playing a bit more seriously as I got a little bit older, and I started playing 3rd edition 40k quite a lot, and a lot of the specialist games, Epic, Mordheim, Necromunda. I played that base until I went to university, and you know, I maybe played a few games of specialist games while I was there, but I kind of fell into 6th edition fantasy afterwards, and then 7th subsequently in a really, really big way. I played that for quite a few years. Did all right, and it wasn't too bad. But in terms of how I play games, you know, everything changed with Confrontation as far as I'm concerned. It really changed my focus from big set-piece games to preferring the small little skirmish games you can play more of. That really changed it. And ever since then, really, I've, you know, had an eye on all of these games like Malifaux, like Godslayer, you know. Gone back to Epic recently again. And I can't really say I play any of the big games that much. I certainly don't play Fantasy. 8th edition killed it for me. Hopefully 9th won't. And I try to get back into 40k every few months. I buy a new army, but I just, you know, play one game and the rules drive me insane.
Today, we're going to talk about a new game. Well, it's not new. It's been out for a while. How long has it been out for?
I think the rulebook may have been out for as long as late 2012. A lot of the models only really came into existence in the last year, and I certainly only heard about it towards the middle or the end of last year, so not long compared to some games, but, you know, still quite a while. So that's a spring chicken.
So what are we talking about? It's a game called Godslayer by Megalith Games. So what is Godslayer, Des?
Well, Godslayer is a skirmish level type game. I call it that because, you know, all these games these days that claim to be skirmishes, you can still have factions where you have 20, 30 guys. You know, some people wouldn't necessarily consider that a skirmish.
Or more.
Or more, indeed, yeah. It's a game, it's a fantasy setting game, which, you know, appeals to some people like me who are a bit old Tolkien enthusiasts and so forth. Mm-hmm. And it's set in this world called Caladorn, which is not necessarily your archetypal fantasy world, but there are a lot of fantasy tropes in there that, you know, people might recognize and chime with. So it's got your beastmen faction, and it's got some noble warrior factions, and it's got a crazy faction of forest folk that like to shoot interlopers, and it's got trolls and monsters and all manner of crazy stuff, but it does have a kind of little unusual streak to it as well.
What's that then?
Well, for example, you know, some of the factions are rather similar to ones that we may have seen in our own history. So, for example, they've got a faction called the Morton Empire, which looks a bit like a bunch of Roman legionaries wandering around and chopping off people's heads. But there's a slight twist on it. The Romans are actually, in this game, the Mortons are necromancers. So they have their legions, and they have their war machines, but they also have legions of undead monsters ready to do their bidding. Big fantasy world, massive background setting. I mean, as part of the rule book that you can buy, you get half of the book is a rule book with the unit characteristics and a little bit of story to go with each one of them. And then as a separate book, you get something called the background book, which, you know, it's a bit like an RPG source book. It's so detailed. It's got maps and tells you their pantheon of gods by race, and goes into all manner of mysteries and other legends. So.
And it's quite a large book as well. It's no small codex type book. It's probably about two or three times the thickness of a codex book, I'd say.
It's 100 and I'm just checking right now. It's 175 pages.
So that's quite a substantial tome, as it were.
Yep. There's, you won't get through that in one sitting unless you've got a lot of time on your hands. Full, chock full of information about all of the races, about where they live, what they do, what their civilizations are based on, and you know how they like to chop each other's heads off.
So it's not steampunk, it's not science fiction, it's purely set with a fantasy background, a traditional fantasy background that we'd recognise, as you said, as a Tolkien-esque type thing. Perhaps, you know, crossovers with fantasy, GW's fantasy battle type, which they obviously may have borrowed from Tolkien as well. But
of course not, don't be ridiculous, come on.
But there are twists like the Romans. Are there any other sort of twists? We've got your traditional beastmen, haven't we, and humans.
Sure. So what I can do is kind of go through the factions, you know, and then you can maybe see which ones are the kind of traditional-ish fantasy factions and which ones might be a little bit different.
Mm-hmm.
So they have six major factions that they've released so far, but with that amount of background, they have almost an infinite resource to draw on for new ones. The first faction is called the Bane Brood, which is a kind of chaotic organization. Well, organization is a bad word because that suggests there's there isn't any anarchy behind it, of your usual goat-headed beast men and monstrous cows that don't give you milk, they give you pain. Mixed with mutant monsters, like they've got this bear that's mutated over time, and it's like a porcupine bear, which is a real pain in the backside.
Yeah.
And then to go with them, they have a bunch of cannibal tribesmen who gain power by eating the hearts of their enemies as they're fighting, which to me, you know, it seems like a bad idea to have lunch whilst you're in combat. But you know, it seems to do all right for them.
So there's like a crossover there with like your traditional perception of chaos or chaos evil with beastmen, but there seems to be a darker element to it, I think.
I mean, there are obviously parallels between chaos in the Warhammer world as it maybe used to have been, where you had the Beastmen in the book with the Chaos Warriors and all the monsters and stuff like that. So, yeah, I mean, there are some parallels, but this faction is really about bringing down civilization. It thinks that civilization is going to destroy the world, and it caused a lot of trouble in the history of the world. I don't want to go too much into the story because we only have a small amount of time, but they want to bring down civilization to try and halt the destruction of the world, and because they do enjoy eating people. So, you know, they've got good reasons as they see it.
Yep.
There's another faction called the Halidynes. Now, a lot of people are interested in this faction because they have some themes that are really popular, like they have a Spartan-type sub-faction, so people, you know, that like 300 and so forth can get behind them. And then they have kind of a Greek oracle wizardy faction called the Temple, which has a lot of spell casting and mythical creatures like Cerberus and so forth, and animated giant statues. So it's a bit Harryhausen. And then they have the Amazon faction, which there aren't really that many models for, but they look really cool, and I think, you know, a lot of people will be interested in those sculpts when they come out.
Yep.
And then obviously we talked about the Mortons. Everyone loves Necromancer Romans. They have a faction called the Nordgard, which is an alliance of dwarves with crazy berserker Vikings and drunken giants. So again, you're ticking a lot of boxes there with fantasy fans.
Yep.
They have a race of kind of trolls called the Troglodytes, who are a mixture of trolls with kind of shadow trolls, which are like ghosts, spirits of evil trolls. And then they have, you know, little gnolls wandering around helping them out and chewing off people's legs.
Mm-hmm.
So that, you know, they do have like a monster traditional Uruk faction, but the difference is that they're not chaotic. That's the Bane Brood's shtick. You know, they kind of exist because they want to bring balance to the universe, and they represent the alignment of shadow. And, you know, they feel that the alignment of light is getting too powerful, and they've, you know, they exist just to tear down the followers of light and try and keep the balance. And then finally, we have the Wild Folk of Anir, and I hope I'm pronouncing that right. Some of these things are not too easy to pronounce. And they're like a confederation of woodland and plains people that don't like interlopers on their land. And, you know, we've all seen wooded folk with bows before in a number of games, but these guys mix that traditional element with crazy death cults who celebrate the cycle of life by turning you into a dead person. And that's how they venerate their goddess and so forth. So you've got the kind of common archetypes, but in there also you have a few threads that give you something different and fairly fresh, I think.
Yeah, so there's a mix of fantasy and pseudo historical links in, and there's crossovers to sort of different types of genres in that sort of medium, you know, in that sort of background, as it were.
Sure.
Do you think there's any comparisons to any other games out there that, you know, in terms of like the figures and settings? Because I think it's taken bits from lots of things to try and make it. To give it appeal to the player base as such.
Yeah, you make a good point there. I think, you know, we're living in a time where there's a lot of games around, and many of those games have some really excellent rules. Some of those games have, you know, certain strengths in some areas, maybe weaknesses in others. And, you know, you find a lot of games these days where you can see the strengths of some games appearing in them, where they've kind of picked and chosen. I don't want to say this is what happened because I have no idea, but you can almost see the strengths of some games in it and then the strengths of other games. So, for example, I think that the game has a very much, in terms of the stat line of the characteristics of models, feels very similar to War Machine. So it has that bell curve of figuring out values and am I going to hit, am I going to do significant damage? So you have that calculation going through your mind as you're playing, which a lot of players enjoy. But on the other hand, it also goes down an action token route, which is a little bit more like games such as Malifaux, where you have a resource pool of actions. You've got to try and figure out how the best that you can use them. You've got so many things you could do, but only a limited choice of how many of them you can do.
Yep.
So, you know, it catches that as well, and I think it kind of melds them together very nicely.
Unfortunately, there's no cards in it, but we do have just traditional six-sided dice in it. But it's not bucket loads of dice. It just seems to be a few dice every now and then, sort of thing.
It's two dice for nearly everything.
Yep, pretty much, yeah.
I know, obviously, some people might not be familiar with War Machine, but in War Machine, you can obviously spike the dice and roll. You can sometimes roll up to five dice. In this game, there are very, very few situations where you'll even roll a third dice, and usually it's something like roll three dice and drop the lowest one. So there's not a lot to boost the rolls very much. It's a game about incremental small benefits that build up over a number of activations, and then you know, you can whack someone on the head with your super guy once he's got all these buffs on him.
So we've said already that it's a skirmish game, and it is a skirmish game. It is not a large figure count game. The small games that we've been playing, because I play as well, have been, what, 10-ish figures? Possibly a bit more?
Yeah, I mean, our games have been veering between, 8, 9 models and maybe 15, 16 models. And I mean, as I said earlier, you can do more.
Yeah.
They allow that because they know some people like, you know, weenie factions or horde factions. But it is a skirmish game. You know, we play what is considered to be kind of like a standard points, but obviously, you know, what is a standard point game, whatever you want it to be. But we play something like 300 points, which, you know, you're playing for an hour or two. And really, if you know, a starter box is over half of that points total already. So once you've got that involved and all the starters have got useful stuff in that you want, you're just adding, you know, maybe a blister box more or a unit more, really, at the end of the day, depending on how you want to run it.
Yeah.
So it can be quite a cost-effective game, you know, somewhat similar to some of the choices you can make in Malifaux, for example.
Yep. So what do you actually need to play the game?
Just two starter boxes, or, you know, if you can get hold of the models any other way, that's great. And two dice. You know, you don't even need to have two dice each, although I would recommend it, because, you know, otherwise you don't want to be rolling cursed dice, do you?
You don't need the rule book, because I think there is a quick play version available on the site, isn't there?
There is.
On the manufacturer's site.
There is. And in addition, even if you don't want to go and download that and have a read through it, in every starter box there's a quick play rule set that doesn't have every rule in it, but it has enough for you to make use of all of the models in there, get a hang of the rules and the different ways of activating models and all the special abilities and tactics.
Yep, and it's a very nice little rule book. You get all the tokens that you need for that particular set of faction models in the, essentially, what is a battle box or a starter box for that particular faction.
Mm-hmm.
You have to cut them out. That's the only thing that I would say is a downside, but, you know, as long as you're safe with a pair of scissors, you could.
That rules me out. So I get my mother to do it for me.
I mean, I've seen this retailed in many of your local gaming stores online. The manufacturer is Megalith Games, and they obviously have a web presence as well, which I believe is megalith-games.com.
I believe you're probably reading it.
So, would you say from a cost point of view, it's an expensive game? Because, you know, Megalith are based out of Germany, essentially, so you can buy stuff from them direct.
Buy direct from their mail order, and their mail order will obviously have the newer release models perhaps a little bit quicker than you might get them in other countries. You know, even though it's been around for, you know, over a year now, it's gaining ground slowly with distributors in the country, and sometimes it can be hard to get hold of things because when they come into the local game shop, they tend to walk out very soon afterwards, and so that can be a problem. But, you know, I've seen it available in loads of shops, loads of web stores, and it seems to be on the increase, if anything.
Yeah, I would say it's comparative to other tabletop miniature games out there, as far as I can see. The big difference is that the figures are metal, and when I say metal, they're almost like the old GW soft metal lead type, well, white metal type figure.
No lead.
No one's
going to die.
Yeah. And some of the bigger beasts, like you mentioned the Ursipine, the bear porcupine thing, and could be used as a small weapon.
I always make the Cluedo joke when we play. You know, someone was killed in the dining room with the Ursipine. They're giant lumps of metal. You know, they haven't scrimped and saved on the metal and hollowed it out. These things, you know, when you put them down, the table feels it.
Oh. That'd be the timer, so that we'd better wind this up. So if you're interested, go and have a look at the website. I'm going to be doing another short episode with Des to talk about the game and the gameplay. So thank you very much, Des, for coming on and telling us about what is, I think, a great game.
No problem. Thanks a lot, Conrad.
Bye-bye.
Bye.
You can contact Fools Daily on Twitter, we're at Fools_Daily, or via email, foolsdaily@outlook.com.